The title of my sermon tonight is a quote. It's a quote from Albert Einstein. I call it spooky action at a distance. And if I were to subtitle it, I would title it Quantum Physics and Christian Faith. Now, I don't want the title or the subtitle to scare you. Believe me, I am not a quantum physicist. I'm not what you would even remotely consider a physicist. I'm not even what anybody would remotely consider a scientist. I mean, I flunked chemistry in high school, and that was the extent of my science. But my interest in quantum physics came about through another avenue, and that is through philosophy. If you study philosophy, if you read philosophy, inevitably you'll get into an area called metaphysics. And basically, metaphysics is a fancy term for, you know, what is the ultimate nature of reality? You know, we look around in our senses, we sense certain things and we see certain things, but what, if you get behind what they would call the phenomena, if you get behind just the way reality appears, and what's the ultimate essence of things? This is metaphysics, and metaphysics inevitably leads you to physics, and physics in the 20th century inevitably leads you to the world of quantum physics. And this is a world where reality is incredibly, incredibly strange. In the quantum realm, nature contradicts our most common sense notions of the way things ought to be. In the quantum realm, it's as if, you know, things happen without causes. Subatomic particles know that you're watching them. Things exist and don't exist at the same time. In the world of quantum physics, in the world of quantum reality, the limits of human logic and reason are clearly, clearly exposed. Quantum physics not only exposes the limits of our logic and reason, it brashly and openly defies our most common sense notions of the way things ought to be. At the quantum level, things happen that scientists can barely understand, much less even begin to try to explain. In many ways, it's more rational to believe that Christ could fill 5,000 beds. Our most common sense notions of the way things ought to be. At the quantum level, things happen that scientists can barely understand, much less even begin to try to explain. In many ways, it's more rational to believe that Christ could fill 5,000 bellies with just a few loaves and fish than it is to believe what goes on in the quantum world. Indeed, in many ways, the foolishness of the gospel makes a lot more sense than what quantum physicists themselves call the absurdness of the quantum world. And that's what I want to look at today a little bit. I want to look at what goes on in the quantum world and then apply that to what we as Christians believe. And again, when we start getting into it, you're going to have to suspend your most basic notions of logic and reason, because you get into the quantum world, they don't work there. Now, I want to jump back a little bit, just give you a little bit of history and bring you right up to this point. Around the 1600s and the 17th century, there was just an incredible change of human knowledge. This was the beginning of a scientific revolution. And for centuries, men's minds had been shackled by what the church taught it, by Aristotle. I mean, you couldn't go to a college in medieval days without signing a paper saying that you would stick to the writings of Aristotle, and anything that contradicted Aristotle, you would reject. you'd have to reject. Aristotle dominated Western world up until the 17th century. And then slowly but surely you had the beginning of the scientific revolution, and men just started to break away from the shackles of previous thought. And what's amazing about that century is not only did people learn new things, but they had a whole new way of learning. And probably of all the figures in that time, that the most extraordinary one, the one that had the biggest impact on the world, that even to this day, though we are not really in a position anymore to really appreciate it, was what Isaac Newton had done to the world. This one man, probably more than any other man, changed the way the whole world thought. You know, and there's a funny story about Newton. When he was at Cambridge, and the plague came to Cambridge, and he left with his few of his books and went to a farm, just worked on the farm. And in this 18-month period, which was probably the most remarkable 18 months in the history of thought, in this period, he invented calculus. Those of you who struggled through calculus, I never got that far in school, but he invented the calculus. He basically discovered the basic laws of motion. You know, anybody, you know, even Mickey Mouse, science. For every action, there's an opposite equal reaction. Object at rest, continuals at rest, and so on. These basic laws that you learn, he discovered them as well. And then also he laid the groundwork for understanding the basic theories of gravity and how gravity worked. But what happened with the gravity, he worked out the math, but because he didn't have his math books with him, the numbers didn't quite work out. And so he just forgot about it, put it away, never told anybody about what he did. Well, 20 years later, a number of England's top scientists, Robert Hooke, Edmund Halley, and Christopher Wren, they were sitting in a London coffee house or something, and they were struggling over these questions of gravity, and they couldn't figure out some of these problems. So one of them said, look, why don't you go ask Isaac Newton? He was, you know, Europe's most celebrated mathematician. Go ask Newton. Maybe he can give you some help with this. So Edmund Halley, the one the comet was named after, that's the size, this is the stature of the people we're dealing with. He goes to Newton's office at Cambridge and sits down with Newton and starts giving him this whole long spiel about, you know, we can't figure this out, and on and on and on. And he goes on, and can you give us any help? And Newton just, 1, 2, 3, just gives him the answer. It was ellipses or something. And Halley looked at him and said, well, how did you know? And he said, well, I worked it out. And he said, well, where did you work it out? So Newton started going through his office, and he couldn't find it. And he couldn't find the papers that he was, you know, we did all this. And one of Newton's biographers joked, while all of Europe was looking for the theory of the laws of gravity, Isaac Newton had lost it. But eventually he found it, and with the help of Halley, he printed it, and it was known as the Principia, and the world was never looked at the world the same through what Newton had done. On his tombstone, Alexander Pope wrote, give you an idea of the stature of Newton. Nature and nature's laws lay hid in night. God said, let Newton be, and all was light. But anyway, so Newton dominated everything by pretty much till the 20th century. Then by the 20th century, Newtonian physics just wasn't working anymore. There were things that it wasn't able to explain. And then eventually, you got the birth of modern physics. In modern physics, you've got relativity and quantum theory. And relativity, just to take a few minutes, this was the work of Albert Einstein. Purely Einstein. And there's two kinds of relativity. There's special relativity and general relativity. And Einstein did this all in his head, and it wasn't until years later. And the gist of special relativity is, to make this fast, if you're standing still and you hear a car horn, and sound comes, about 700 miles an hour? So if you're standing still, sound will come past you at 700 miles an hour. Now, if you were to move 200 miles an hour towards the sound, and the sound's coming at you at 700 miles an hour, at what speed would the sound hit you? 900 miles an hour, okay? Now, if you were moving 500 miles an hour this way, and the sound was coming at you at 700 miles an hour, how fast would it reach you? 400 miles an hour, okay? Okay, so basically, that's the way it is. Whatever the speed is and you add to it, you add on it. Well, with light, if you're standing still, light comes 186,000 miles a second. Okay? Now, you would think logically, if you were to move, say, at 100,000 miles in a second towards the beam of light, and the light was coming at you at 186,000 miles a second, it would reach you at 286,000 miles a second. Doesn't do it. It reaches you at 186,000 miles a second. In other words, no matter how fast you're moving, either again, towards a beam of light or away from a beam of light, the beam of light will always reach you at 186,000 miles a second. Well, how could that be? It's because your time changes the faster you move. Okay? Now try to mull that over but a little bit. But that's even the easy one. General relativity is even more complicated, and the gist of general relativity is simply that gravity is just simply mass curves space and time. And all gravity is just a curvature of space and time because mass twists it. The best way to describe it is you got a big weight and you lay it on a bed and it pushes down the bed, and you know how like the kind of curve in and there'll be lines, and if you were to drop a marble it would roll in. That is essentially what gravity is. And it was funny with Einstein, when he did the general theory of relativity, there was a number of years before the theory could be tested. So he's this brash young man, and someone said to Einstein when he was in his 20s, well, suppose they do an experiment and it shows that the experiment shows that your theory is wrong. And 10 years before the experiment happened, Einstein just looked him in the face and said, so much wrong for the experiment. The theory's right. And it was right. And it was right. So, with relativity though, we're dealing with big things. We're dealing with the big world and space and so on. With quantum theory, you're dealing with the world of subatomic particles. You're dealing with the world of atoms and electrons and neutrons and the subatomic world. And here's where we're going to look at this now. And again, just suspend your common sense, because in a few minutes you're going to realize that common sense is just not going to work. Now the best way, and again, if we got anybody out here who's a quantum physicist, you're going to realize I'm giving this at a brevity that borders on parody, only because that's about the level I understand it, and you get much deeper than that, it's very hard to follow. But let's start out for a minute with a couple analogies. Imagine you got a pool of water. Okay, just a plain old pool of water, and you drop a rock into the water. It'll make ripples. Okay, just make ripples, little waves. Okay, now imagine you put a barrier in that pool, and you got a hole in it. And you drop the rock, and the waves go out, and then the waves will reach that hole, and then some of the waves, they'll make little waves as they go through the hole. Okay? You just drop it in, and the waves are going out, and there's a barrier, and then when the wave reaches it, they'll go through the hole, and they'll make little waves on the other side of the hole, other side of the barrier. Okay? Simple enough. Now, if you had two holes there, and then you drop the rock in and you made the waves, and some waves would go through one hole and some waves would go through the other hole, and if the holes were close enough, those little waves on the opposite side would meet and they'd make a little interference pattern. You ever see that when you drop rocks together in the pool, the waves meet and they make a pattern? So that's what you simply have. You drop a rock in the water, the waves are made, they got two holes, waves go through one hole, some waves go through the other hole, and if they're close enough, the waves happen to meet, and you get a little interference pattern on the other side. Okay? That happens with water. Well, interestingly enough, beams of light do the exact same thing. Okay? If you were to shoot a couple light through two little holes in a barrier, two little holes, the light would go through, and they make waves on each side of the hole, and then the waves would make an interference pattern. Okay? Because light, at this point, they understand this way at least travels in waves. So again, two holes, light, water goes through, they make the waves come outside the holes they meet, and they make a wave interference pattern. Now, so far so good. Let's take another look at this now. Say why you're shooting light through the one hole, you close up the other hole. Okay? So you're shooting light through one hole. Now, instead of shooting a beam of light, you know what they can do? They can shoot one photon at a time through a hole. So let's change the analogy now. Imagine you're standing there by a brick wall, and there's a hole in the wall, and you've got rocks. And you're throwing one rock at a time through a hole. Okay? So just picture that now. You're standing there, you're throwing rocks through a hole. The rocks would simply pile up outside the hole. Okay? Same thing happens with light. With a beam of with one photon at a time, they shoot one photon at a time through one hole, and they just pile up, just like you were throwing rocks through a hole. Okay? One photon at a time, one rock at a time. Now, let's say while you're throwing rocks through the hole in the wall, somebody were to open up another hole in the wall, say 10, 20 feet away, outside of the trajectory of what you're doing. Okay, they open up the hole. Now, you're throwing your rocks through the hole. Is that opening of that hole going to make any difference? You're just throwing your rocks through one hole. Of course, opening that other hole would make no difference at all. You're just throwing your rocks through it. Now, in the world of the quantum world, you're doing the same thing. You're shooting one photon at a time through that hole. They're just piling up outside like rocks. And then, if while you're doing that, over here, out of the complete range of the trajectory of the photon, you were to open another hole, what do you think happens? You get the wave interference pattern on the other side. You see what I say? All of a sudden, you get the exact pattern as if you were shooting beams of light through both holes. In other words, you're just shooting one through one hole, and all of a sudden you open up the other hole, and all of a sudden you get the pattern on the other side. So it's almost as if the problems they have is, number one, how do the electrons going through the hole even know that the second hole is open? Because obviously they know. Then the second is, even if it knows, does it split in half? How does it go through one hole and the other hole at the same time? And then the third problem is, how does it know where to line itself up in the wave interference pattern on the other side? If you have an answer to that, you'd win a Nobel Prize. Because they don't know. Okay? And that's one of the great mysteries of the quantum world. How does that electron even know the other hole is open? Okay? That's one of the things in the quantum world that they have. Another thing they have in quantum world is, this gets even worse. Imagine you have two particles, two subatomic particles, and they're separated by a million light years. And subatomic particles have spins. They just spin. And the latest research, and this is established fact now, is the mere act of a human being looking at the spin of one of these subatomic particles will cause the spin of this other subatomic particle at a speed faster than light to reverse itself. All right? Simple enough? So it's like you got a cue ball here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you got a cue ball in Paris, and they're spinning. And all you have to do is look at the spin of one of the cue balls. The one here. Just look at it. You don't have to touch it. You don't have to do anything. Just looking at the spin of the one cue ball here in Lincoln will cause the spin of the cue ball in Paris to reverse itself at a speed faster than light. Okay? This is the world of quantum reality. Now, commenting, it's interesting. Einstein. Einstein, who helped lay the foundations of it, Einstein went to his death denying all this. He couldn't accept it, even though he laid the foundations for it, and his Nobel Prize was originally in quantum physics. Einstein, especially the spinning thing, he called it spooky action at a distance. And, you know, Einstein's a guy that he could think of this other stuff up purely out of thought experiments. He's a guy that could think abstract. He couldn't accept it. Niels Bohr, one of the founders of quantum reality, he said, if someone says that he could think about quantum physics without becoming dizzy, that shows only that he has not understood anything about it. Now, however complicated this stuff is, quantum physics does make a very simple point. And that's the point that I want to make today, because as I got into this stuff and I started spending endless hours trying to read this, I thought, well, what am I learning out of this that could do me any good? And for better or for worse, you're getting it tonight. And the point is, what hit me was if such a hard science, and I use the word hard not in the sense of difficult, but in the sense of it's not like sociology or something. I mean, you can do scientific experiments and so on. If such a hard science as physics itself confronts us with aspects of reality that go so far beyond human reason, why shouldn't aspects of the gospel do the same? In other words, that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, would incarnate into humanity, die for our sins. This is not a truth that logic, reason, and experience could ever, ever teach us. Logic alone, I might use logic and come to believe in a creator, but logic alone isn't going to draw me to the cross. See, the gospel is a truth that has to be told us. It has to, in a sense, be spoon-fed to us. Otherwise, we'd never know it, no matter how much logic we use. So the point is, even when it's told to us, we run into things that don't make sense, that logic and reason can't answer for me. So to believe that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us, this isn't the same kind of belief as believing that 2 + 2 = 4. It's a different kind of belief. Though actually, you know, in quantum mathematics, they could prove that 2 + 2 doesn't = 4. Because you never know at any given moment what 2 equals in quantum world. So it gets kind of sticky. But see, who needs faith? I don't need faith to believe that all the angles of a triangle equal 180 degrees. I don't need faith for that. I need faith is to believe in, quote, the foolishness of the gospel. Go back some time and read how many times the Apostle Paul talks about the foolishness of the gospel. But hey, it doesn't seem any more, quote, foolish to me than quantum reality. Than what goes on at the quantum level. From pure logic alone, it's easier to believe that Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures. It's a lot easier for me to believe that than it is for me to believe that merely by observing the spin of one subatomic particle, just looking at it, you can cause the spin of another subatomic particle a million light years away to reverse itself. I don't know about you, but I have less trouble believing in Christ dying for my sins. That doesn't do to logic anywhere near what that aspect of quantum theory does to logic. You know, it's interesting too. Jesus, when Jesus was here, when he would raise the dead, when he would feed 5,000 people out of a few loaves and fish, when he told Peter that time to go throw a net or whether throw a fish hook in the water and catch a fish and pull the coin out, these things Jesus did. You know, one of the things they say to me, it says to me that Jesus was telling us right off the bat, hey, your science and your logic and your reason, that's all fine up to a point, but isn't going to do you much good with me. What science is going to tell me? Science is going to tell me you can't do those things. So what about the resurrection of the dead? How many of you here believe that the dead are going to be resurrected? You believe the dead? Can you show me one thing? Can you give me one logical thing? Pure logic alone that's going to tell me the dead are going to be resurrected. Can you show me anything in nature? Can you show me anything in science that's going to tell me that? The only thing nature and science tells me about the resurrection of the dead, the closest thing that nature tells me about that, is that if I want to live again, when I'm in they put me in the ground and I'm fertilizer, some plant will grow out of me. You know, and then you can maybe, you know, grow corn. You can eat the corn and whatever. That's what science tells me. That's what science tells me. Science doesn't help me with that. Logic and reason doesn't help me with that. How often in faith, you know, you run into a question and you move back and you say, all right, well, this happens because of this, and then this happens, and then you move back, and then boom, you run into a brick wall. How often does that happen? It happens to me more and more as I'm a believer. You know, it's funny. I find the older I get and the more I study, the more questions I have. But the less and less of a need I have to have them answered. Because I find the older I get, the easier it is for me to take things on faith. How many other things do we believe up to a point? You know, logic works to a point and then you have to stop. And see, the thing too, unlike quantum physics, the gospel doesn't ask us to defy logic. It doesn't ask me to defy it. It simply asks me to transcend it. But there's a difference. There's a difference. You know, it was interesting. Thomas Jefferson, because I'm into religious liberty and I read a lot of Jefferson. I just finished a 6-volume series on the guy's life. He was quite a character. But what he did was, at one point, and this really spurred me, this whole concept spurred me from Jefferson. Jefferson amended the New Testament. And he took out everything out of the New Testament. Because Jefferson was a child of the Enlightenment. Okay, lightning, all that ration, reason, the whole thing. I mean, they took it way too far. But he said he was going to expunge from the New Testament everything that went against logic and reason. Okay? And you know, he didn't have a whole lot left. All the miracles were gone. All the miracles were gone. All the stuff about Christ talking about, you know, coming back and the resurrection of the dead, it was all gone. You know, in a sense, he was right. If you're going to limit what you believe purely to logic and reason alone, you'll never be a born-again Christian. You'll never be Seventh-day Adventist Christian. And think about what ultimately is the greatest hope of all that we have. Our great hope is the second coming, resurrection. And yet that in and of itself, science, logic, reason, isn't going to tell me anything about that. The only thing science, logic, and reason in and of itself is going to tell me about the resurrection of the dead is that it ain't going to happen. So I'm not limiting what I believe to science, to logic, to reason alone. And when I got into quantum physics and started reading about it, here I saw something pure science alone. Pure hard science alone showed me just how limiting logic and reason could be. Because if you were going to go by pure logic alone, you couldn't believe that this stuff happens at the quantum realm. So again, however much the gospel might ask me to believe in things that transcend logic, nothing about Christ's death on the cross, nothing about salvation, nothing doesn't ask me to believe in anything that defies it. See, there's a difference. Christ doesn't ask me to believe that 2 + 2 = 5. Doesn't ask me to believe that. But it simply asks me to believe in things that go beyond whatever logic and reason could take me. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-logic and reason. If anything, it's logic and reason which has brought me to the point to realize that logic and reason only could go so far. But the point is, I'm not, you know, we live in a world of technology. We live in a world where, you know, science works in so many ways. And we are going to box ourselves in. We are such children of the Enlightenment. We've been so influenced by the Greeks. We're boxed in so often by logic and reason. And there's a whole reality out there. There's a whole reality out there that goes so far beyond what mere logic and reason alone can take me to. And again, the life and teachings and death of Jesus more than anything else should show us that. You know, here's another point too. And it has to do with studying. And again, I'm not pushing this to an extreme. Apostle Paul. What did Paul's deep study lead him to do in the beginning? Paul's deep study, what did it lead him to do? It led him to kill Christians. Okay? Paul studied all this. He studied, it led him to kill Christians. Then one day he's walking along a road and, you know, this vision appears to him and a light, you know, and it blinds him and all that. And then he gets converted and he becomes a believer. And see, Paul's conversion says a lot to me. Says a lot to me. He had, in a sense, almost had to get pulled out of the realm of logic and reason, pulled out of this horizontal in which he was working in, and got pulled up, given an experience that transcended logic and reason. Oh, I've read all sorts of accounts of Paul was on drugs when he had the, you know, drank too much Syrian wine and he had the experience. But again, you know, there was a church father. I read this about 2 years ago and I almost fell out of my chair because here was a church father, 1100s, captured the essence of my experience. Latin phrase, credo ut intelligam. I believe in order that I may understand. That makes sense to you? See, we tend to work it the other way. We tend to work it the other way, but Apostle Paul, all his studying and all his understanding led him to persecute the church. He had an experience that transcended logic, that transcended reason, became a believer, then went back in. And Paul, you read him, he doesn't throw out logic and reason, but he keeps it in their proper place. The bottom line, if something is solid, as tangible, and as accessible to our senses as matter, as material itself, as a material world itself, can evade the reach of reason, how much more so should reason's limits be apparent in something like the Christian faith, which encompasses a reality far beyond the mere materialism of what we see and feel and most immediately experience in our lives. I mean, it's quantum physics has showed me the limits of logic and reason alone. And if its limits are going to be in something like that, why should I worry about when logic and reason, I can't explain everything logically and reasonably. You know, why on a plane, you know, our lives are in God's hands. Did God just happen to have on that Pan Am, well, not Pan Am, that's been out for a long time, that flight, that TWA flight over Manhattan, over New York a couple years ago, did he just happen to have 300-400 people and he decided, okay, I want all these, are time for you all to go? They just happen to all be on the flight? I don't understand that. Free will and determinism. I believe I have free will, and yet in the end, ultimately, God's got the whole world in His hands. I can't work that out logically and rationally. How many more things do we run into that logic and reason? And I find the older I get and the more I study, the less and less I need to apply logic and reason. Because the older I get and the more I study, the more and more I see the limits of logic and reason. And I guess my point on all this is, as Christians, as believers, we live in, you know, America, industrialized nation, pragmatic people. We see so much that where logic and reason works. So the natural tendency is going to be, well, let's apply it to the church as well. If it doesn't, if it's not logical, if it's not reasonable, I'm going to throw it out. You can't be a Christian if you're going to limit what you know and believe to pure logic alone. Now, I'm not saying to throw it out. And as a matter of fact, tomorrow I'm going to preach. Yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow. Yeah. I'll balance this out a little. I think I'm giving you some sort of pietistic, you know, just go with the feeling, you know, kind of. I'm not saying that, but you got to know the balance. You got to find the balance. Werner Heisenberg was one of the quantum pioneers. And he was musing about the early days of quantum physics when they first started discovering these things around the turn of the 20th century. And he wrote in a book telling about this. And he said, quote, "I remember discussions with Niels Bohr, which went through many hours till very late at night and ended almost in despair. And when at the end of the discussion I went alone for a walk in the neighboring park, I repeated to myself again and again the question, can nature possibly be as absurd as it seems to us in these atomic experiments?" I'd say perhaps he should have studied something a little more logical than quantum physics. Maybe like the gospel. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you so much that you have given us your word, that you have laid out truths clearly and succinctly in this book, truths that we in and of ourselves through logic, reason, and alone could never know. Lord, I thank you for the gift of rationality. I thank you for the gift of logic. These are things which in many ways differentiate us from all the other creatures on this planet. And Lord, at the same time too, I pray you'll help us to realize just the limits, that we are sinful, fallen beings, that every aspect of our lives have been corrupted by sin. And indeed, maybe that's why you had to reveal everything so clearly to us through your word, because we never could know it any other way. Lord, I'm sure all of us here today have questions. All of us here today struggle with things that we don't understand. All of us here come, even things in your word, things about the basic gospel that just don't make sense to us, that we can't totally rationalize and can't totally work out. And Lord, I pray you'll help us all to realize that that's just the nature of reality, and that nothing we can explain and understand totally through logic and reason. And if something like physics itself defies it, how much more in the realm of faith? So Lord, give us more faith. Help us surrender to you. And give us the faith to believe in things that we don't totally understand, that we can't understand. And just to die to self and to surrender and to reach out in sheer helplessness. Because we are in and of ourselves helpless. And so again, I just thank you for the truths that you've given us in your word, and the truth of the gospel and the hope that we have. And may we cling to that hope no matter what comes in our path. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.